Two Old Women, an Alaskan Legend of Betrayal, Courage, and Survival by Velma Wallace. Chapter 1. Hunger and Cold Take Their Toll. The air stretched tight, quiet and cold over the vast land. Tall spruce branches hung heavily laden with snow, awaiting distant spring winds. The frosted willow seemed to tremble in the freezing temperatures. Far off in the seemingly dismal land were bands of people dressed in furs and animal skins, huddled close to small campfires. Their weather-burnt faces were stricken with looks of hopelessness as they faced starvation and the future held little promise of better days. These nomads were the people of the Arctic region of Alaska, always on the move in search of food. Where the caribou and other migrating animals roamed, the people followed. But the deep cold of winter presented special problems. The moose, their favorite source of food, took refuge from the penetrating cold by staying in one place and were difficult to find. Smaller, more accessible animals, such as rabbits and tree squirrels, could not sustain a large band such as this one. And during the cold spells, even the smaller animals either disappeared in hiding or were thinned by predators, man and animal alike. So during this unusually bitter chill in the late fall, the land seemed void of life as the cold hovered menacingly. During the cold, hunting required more energy than at other times. Thus the hunters were fed first, as it was their skill on which the people depended. Yet with so many to feed, what food they had was depleted quickly. Despite their best efforts, many of the women and children suffered from malnutrition, and some would die of starvation. In this particular band were two old women cared for by the people for many years. The older woman's name was Chi, for she reminded her parents of a chickadee bird when she was born. The other woman's name was Saw, meaning star, because at the time of her birth, her mother had been looking at the fall night sky, concentrating on the distant stars to take her mind away from the painful labor contractions. The chief would instruct the younger men to set up shelters for these two old women each time the band arrived at a new campsite, and to provide them with wood and water. The younger woman pulled the two elder women's possessions from one camp to the next. In turn, the old women tanned animal skins for those who helped them. The arrangement worked well. However, the two old women shared a character flaw unusual for people of those times. Constantly they complained of aches and pains, and they carried walking sticks to attest to their handicaps. Surprisingly, the others seemed not to mind, despite having been taught from the days of their childhood that weakness was not tolerated among the inhabitants of this harsh motherland. Yet no one reprimanded the two women, and they continued to travel with the stronger ones, until one fateful day. On that day, something more than the cold hung in the air as the people gathered around their new flickering fires and listened to the chief. He was a man who stood almost a head taller than other men. From within the folds of his parka ruff, he spoke about the cold, hard days they were to expect and of what each would have to contribute if they were to survive the winter. Then, in a loud, clear voice, he made a sudden announcement. "The council and I have arrived at a decision." The chief paused as if to find the strength to voice his next words. "We are going to have to leave the old ones behind." His eyes quickly scanned the crowd for reactions, but the hunger and cold had taken their toll, and the people did not seem to be shocked. Many expected this to happen, and some thought it for the best. In those days, leaving the old behind in times of starvation was not an unknown act. although in this band it was happening for the first time. The starkness of the primitive land seemed to demand it, as the people, to survive, were forced to imitate some of the ways of the animals. Like the younger, more able wolves who shunned the old leader of the pack, these people would leave the old behind so that they could move faster without the extra burden. The older women, Chi, had a daughter and a grandson among the group. The chief looked into the crowd for them and saw that they, too, had shown no reaction. Greatly relieved that the unpleasant announcement had been made without incident, the chief instructed everyone to pack immediately. Meanwhile, this brave man who was their leader could not bring himself to look at the two old women, for he did not feel so strong now. The chief understood why the people who cared for the old women did not raise objections. In these hard times, many of the men became frustrated and were angered easily, and one wrong thing said or done could cause an uproar and make matters worse. So it was that the weak and beaten members of the tribe kept what dismay they felt to themselves, for they knew that the cold could bring on a wave of panic, followed by a cruelty and brutality among people fighting for survival. In the many years the women had been with the band, the chief had come to feel affection for them. Now he wanted to be away as quickly as possible so that the two old women could not look at him and make him feel worse than he had ever felt in his life. The two women sat old and small before the campfire, with their chins held up proudly, disguising their shock. In their younger days, they had seen very old people left behind, but they never expected such a fate. They started ahead numbly, as if they had not heard the chief condemn them to a certain death, to be left alone to fend for themselves in a land that understood only strength. Two weak old women stood no chance against such a rule. The news left them without words or action and no way to defend themselves. Of the two, Chi was the only one with a family, a daughter, Ozinelli, and a grandson, Shra Zhu. She waited for her daughter to protest, but none came, and a deeper sense of shock overcame her. Not even her own daughter would try to protect her. Next to her, Saw also was stunned. Her mind reeled, and though she wanted to cry out, no words came. She felt as if she were in a terrible nightmare, where she could neither move nor speak. As the band slowly trudged away, Chi's daughter went over to her mother, carrying a bundle of babiche, thickly stripped raw moose hide that served many purposes. She hung her head in shame and grief, for her mother refused to acknowledge her presence. Instead, Chi stared unflinchingly ahead. Ozinelli was in deep turmoil. She feared that, if she defended her mother, the people would settle the matter by leaving her behind and her son too. Worse yet, in their famished state, they might do something even more terrible. She could not chance it. With those frightening thoughts, Ozinelli silently begged with sorrowful eyes for forgiveness and understanding as she gently laid the babiche down in front of her rigid parent. Then she slowly turned and walked away with a heaviness in her heart, knowing she had just lost her mother. The grandson, Shra Zhu, was deeply disturbed by the cruelty. He was an unusual boy. While the other boys competed for their manhood by hunting and wrestling, this one was content to help provide for his mother and the two old women. His behavior seemed to be outside of the structure of the band's organization, handed down from generation to generation. In this case, the women did most of the burdensome tasks, such as pulling the well-packed toboggans. In addition, much other time-consuming work was expected to be done by the women, while the men concentrated on hunting so that the band could survive. No one complained, for that was the way things were and always had been. Shra Zhu held much respect for the women. He saw how they were treated, and he disapproved. And while it was explained to him over and over, he never understood why the men did not help the women. But his training told him that he never was to question the ways of the people, for that would be disrespectful. When he was younger, Shua Zhu was not afraid to voice his opinions on this subject, for youth and innocence were his guardians. Later, he learned that such behavior invited punishment. He felt the pain of the silent treatment when even his mother refused to speak to him for days. So Shua Zhu learned that it caused less pain to think about certain things than to speak about them. Although he thought abandoning the helpless old women was the worst thing the people could do, Shua Zhu was struggling with himself. His mother saw the turmoil raging in his eyes, and she knew that he was close to protesting. She went to him quickly and whispered urgently into his ear not to think of it, for the men were desperate enough to commit any kind of cruel action. Shua Zhu saw the men's dark faces and knew this to be true, so he held his tongue even as his heart continued to rage rebelliously. In those days, each young boy was trained to care for his weapons, sometimes better than he cared for his loved ones, for the weapons were to be his livelihood when he became a man. When a boy was caught handling his weapon the wrong way or for the wrong purpose, it resulted in harsh punishment. As he grew older, the boy would learn the power of his weapon and how much significance it had, not only for his own survival, but also for that of his people. Shua Zhu threw all this training and thoughts of his own safety to the winds. He took from his belt a hatchet made of sharpened animal bones bound tightly together with hardened babiche and stealthily placed it high in the thick boughs of a bushy young spruce tree, well concealed from the eyes of the people. As Shua Zhu's mother packed their things, he turned towards his grandmother. Though she seemed to look right through him, Shua Zhu made sure no one was watching as he pointed to his empty belt, then towards the spruce tree. Once more, he gave his grandmother a look of hopelessness and reluctantly turned and walked away to join the others, wishing with a sinking feeling that he could do something miraculous to end this nightmarish day. The large band of famished people slowly moved away, leaving the two women sitting in the same stunned position on their piled spruce boughs. Their small fire cast a soft orange glow onto their weathered faces. A long time passed before the cold brought Qi out of her stupor. She was aware of her daughter's helpless gesture, but believed that her only child should have defended her even in the face of danger. The old woman's heart softened as she thought of her grandson. How could she bear hard feelings toward one so young and gentle? The others made her angry, especially her daughter. Had she not trained her to be strong? Hot, unbidden tears ran from her eyes. At that moment, Saw lifted her head in time to see her friend's tears. A rush of anger surged within her. How dare they? Her cheeks burned with the humiliation. She and the other old woman were not close to dying. Had they not sewed and tanned for what the people gave them? They did not have to be carried from camp to camp. They were neither helpless nor hopeless. Yet they had been condemned to die. Her friend had seen 80 summers. She, 75. The old ones she had seen left behind when she was young were so close to death that some were blind and could not walk. Now here she was, still able to walk, to see, to talk, yet, bah! Younger people these days looked for easier ways out of hard times. As the cold air smothered the campfire, Saw came alive with a greater fire within her, almost as if her spirit had absorbed the energy from the now glowing embers of the campfire. She went to the tree and retrieved the hatchet, smiling softly as she thought of her friend's grandson. She sighed as she walked toward her companion, who had not stirred. Saw looked up at the blue sky. To an experienced eye, the blue this time of winter meant cold. Soon it would be colder yet as night approached. With a worried frown on her face, Saw kneeled beside her friend and spoke in a gentle but firm voice. "My friend," she said and paused, hoping for more strength than she felt. "We can sit here and wait to die. We will not have long to wait. Our time of leaving this world should not come for a long time yet," she added quickly when her friend looked up with a panic-stricken eyes. "But we will die if we just sit here and wait. This would prove them right about our helplessness." She listened with despair, knowing that her friend was dangerously close to accepting a fate of death from cold and hunger. Saw spoke more urgently. "Yes, in their own way, they have condemned us to die. They think that we are too old and useless. They forget that we too have earned the right to live. So I say, if we are going to die, my friend, let us die trying, not sitting."